This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of this podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/sword. That's audiblepodcast.com/sword.
Is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Everyone, welcome to the Sword and Laser Podcast, episode number 100!
Hey, look, it's everyone!
Party! Streamers! Everybody came!
Dragons falling from the sky.
I'm Veronica Belmont.
And I'm Tom Merritt.
And if you are just joining us for the very first time, welcome. This is the show where we talk about what?
Listen to catch up.
You have a little bit to listen to, yes. We have a back catalog.
Sorry about that.
But this is the show where we talk about our favorite science fiction and fantasy books, discuss what's going on in the genre world, and talk about what you guys are discussing over on the Goodreads forum.
Woo!
Woo! So we usually kick off the show with the segment known as What Are We Drinking? We haven't yet picked a new name. There are many suggestions going on over on Goodreads in the thread that was started that we need a more...
Gotta pick one.
More specific name that is more sword and lasery. So we're working on that. What?
Do you have a favorite yet?
I don't have a favorite yet. I need to go back and look at them.
Yeah, I don't have a... We got to have the right name.
Got to have the right name.
Yeah.
So this is a very celebratory episode because it is number 100. I am drinking Cupcake Vineyards Red Velvet.
That's a cupcake. You can't drink that. That's a food.
It's basically you take a cupcake and you mash it up and you shove it inside a wine bottle. Then you add a little bit of water and a little bit of vodka and you just kind of swig it around a little bit.
That's not what it is.
That's not what it is. No, okay. It is an excellent blend from California, and you can buy it at Trader Joe's.
I am having a Maker's Mark.
Ah, not a wine, but
bourbon.
Also excellent.
Well, it's what are we drinking now? What wine are we drinking, right?
I know, but usually we're kind of on theme. That's true.
I know. Usually I am having a glass of wine, but not tonight.
So I wanted to play you guys a little bit of episode number one. Because I thought it would be funny. Awful. Huh?
My audio is awful in this.
Your audio is kind of awful tonight, too. But I think... you're a little like
in honor
coming in and out.
First episode, I made my audio awful tonight.
All right. Well, how about this? We'll play a little bit of episode one, and then I'll edit it. And then when we come back, we'll try a new connection on your Skype, and maybe you'll sound better.
All right. We'll do it.
All right. So listen to episode number one, the first couple of minutes of The Sword and Laser.
It's gonna be the future soon. I won't always be this way. When the things that make me weak and strange get engineered away. It's gonna be the future soon. Never seen it quite so clear. When my heart is breaking, I can close my eyes. It's already here.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Sword and Laser Podcast, episode number one. I'm Veronica Belmont.
I'm Tom Merritt.
And this is our new show, and it's all about our book club that we have online at theswordandlaser.com.
Yes, our brand new sci-fi and fantasy book club, thus The Sword and the Laser.
Yeah, we're very clever like that. You actually came up with that name kind of joking around. And I was like, no, that's
great. I
was
coming up with like all kinds of ridiculous names for this thing, and that one stuck somehow.
So yeah, we're on our fourth book right now. In the past, we have read, we started with The Golden Compass. That was our first fantasy book because they were coming out with the movie.
Right around the time of the movie. Yeah.
Exactly. And that went over very well. And then we did Ender's Game by Orson Scott Card, which is one of my personal favorites.
Also going to become a movie soon.
Someday, yeah. I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah, me too.
I heard it's coming, but I haven't heard much about it.
I've heard that that's approved, but I don't know. There's so many stages in a film about when it gets green lit and then approved for production, and then production starts your principal photography, and I have no idea where it is.
Yeah, and then the third book we read was American Gods. So far, our least popular book, I have to say. I hope that's not because people are losing interest. I hope it's just because it wasn't in, like, I hope people just weren't into it that much. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we've been putting them up. I mean, we picked the first one ourselves, but we've been putting the others up to a vote, and it won the vote, but then not that many people jumped on board. But I'm really excited about this one, because this one we're doing now, Neuromancer by William Gibson, is the first one that I haven't previously read.
Okay, and we're back. Man, it kind of sounded the same, except your audio was much, much worse.
I was on a ThinkPad with, as I remember, a microphone plugged into the in jack for the recording and just headphones for the out jack. There was no USB mixer. There was no headset. Wow.
Very old school style. And of course, we were discussing Neuromancer at that time. And I actually went back and read some of that stuff. Man, I know I read the book, but the things we talked about, I can barely even remember talking about it.
It's funny how much stuff fades from your memory.
Yeah.
Like I've had that that going back and seeing just Goodreads reviews that I've left on books and being like, wow, that sounds like a really good book. I should read that. Oh, wait, I wrote that review because I read it.
Yeah, it is kind of funny how that happens. But yeah, let's move on to our other regular segment known as the Quick Burns.
Hey, this is like the Quick Burns in the video show.
It is like the Quick Burns in the video show. Both segments happen simultaneously in real time. That's not actually true. So, hey, Harry Potter is coming to the Kindle. Yay!
Yay! Well, sort of yay. Mild yay. Mm-hmm. Qualified yay. What's happening is Harry Potter is still available directly from Pottermore if you want to own the book. But if you're an Amazon Prime member, which is the $79 a year you pay, you get free two-day shipping and access to video on demand and their lending library. That's the key. Harry Potter, all seven books, now available in the lending library.
Very nice. And of course, you can still get them as well, DRM free, over on Pottermore. So lots of good stuff for Harry Potter fans this week.
And by the way, if you're an Amazon Prime member, you go to the lending library and you're like, you are lying liars who lie. It doesn't start till June 19th. So you got to wait till then. Then they will show up in the lending.
Got a little bit of time. And hey, if you are a Game of Thrones fan, and I know many of you are, you can check out some animated shorts to help you brush up on your history. This is over on IO9. And these are pretty awesome. They're actually produced by HBO.
For the Blu-ray, right?
For the Blu-ray, I believe, yeah. And you can get them on YouTube right now. And as Lauren says, she's not sure how long these are going to be up for, but they're pretty cool.
Yeah, these are kind of, I don't know, they're like the motion comics from Dark Horse, sort of. But they just sort of tell these short 2-3 minute tales about the backstory of all the great houses and all of that sort of thing.
And that's always good stuff to know. I mean, if you're a super fan of the show or a super fan of the books, it's nice to get, you know, you get a lot of that backstory in the text, but sometimes either it just happens so fast or there's just so much other stuff going on, you don't really absorb it. This is a great way to kind of get a primer, other than going to the Wiki of Ice and Fire, which is the default place to get all things Song of Ice and Fire trivia related information.
I'll tell you, the one I like the best is the Children of the Forest. Because they're the ones you actually know the least about, even in the book. And they're barely touched on in the television series. And I've forgotten the little that I know about them from the book. So I found that one the most, not educational, but sort of refreshing to be like, oh, right, right. That's what they're all about. Cool. Mm-hmm. Got it. So, also, that's Tonks from Harry Potter.
Man, Tonks. We saw her boobs.
We did.
Made me a little uncomfortable.
And I think a lot of people who saw Tonks and Harry Potter had a wish fulfilled in that episode.
Oh, well, there you go. I guess that is one good way of looking at it. So we talk about a lot of dark fantasy on the show, a lot of dark sci-fi. But I really enjoyed this article also on IO9 about fantasy novels that will restore your faith in humanity. Apparently, they reached out to a few good fantasy authors and asked them, what books should you read
to have your faith restored? What are some optimistic books? What are some books that make you feel good about human nature?
Yeah, because, you know, we love, don't get us wrong, we love our Joe Abercrombies, we love our Patrick Rothfusses, and they're great. And in fact, I don't even think they're necessarily negative. They're just very gritty and dark. And sometimes people are like, hey, you know what? I want something light, even if it's just to vary the mood. So they've got some excellent recommendations here. The one that caught my eye when I first saw the story was Shauna McGuire, author of the October Day novels.
Also, isn't she also Mira Grant?
Yes, I believe so.
I believe that is her nom de plume.
Did you just out her? I don't know. I don't think it's a secret.
I don't think so.
No.
I don't think so. Is it?
Not anymore.
Not anymore. Whatever. She recommended It by Stephen King. Don't know if that's really an optimistic view.
It is, though.
Is it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Because the kids win. They fight. They stand. They beat back the darkness. It's the right thing to do. I mean, the It character is dark, but the kids win, right? Mm-hmm. The problem with the dark fantasy these days is like the good guys don't always win, or they're not always good guys. You find out that they're, you know, actually have this horrible flaw, which is cool. And I'm all for that. But It is a very clear, like, good guys, bad guys, good guys win.
Okay, so I feel better now. It's on her blog that she is Mira Grant.
Okay, yeah, I was looking it up too.
So I don't... I feel like that couldn't possibly be something people didn't know, but then I had this horrible, like, sick feeling in my stomach, like, oh, crap, what did I do?
Well,
because I've been emailing with her about, like, the trilogy and stuff, and... I don't
we're
know.
We're going to interview her eventually.
We are. Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
For the Mira Grant things.
Yes. All right. Well, that makes me feel better. Okay. I feel less stupid and scared now.
Well, and we're going to have, you know, it makes me think of, we're going to have Ty Frank and I think maybe Daniel as well on the video show to talk about James S.A. Corey, which he is a co-author of.
Right.
And it becomes this weird thing of like, we're having James S. A. Corey on kind
but
of.
Only half of that
well,
fake
but I,
person.
Well, Daniel might join, and then we'll have all of them, but he'll be two people.
But then we have the entire person.
It's weird.
All in one show. Tell me about this other IO9 article you selected today.
Well, I have...
Oh, I'm sorry. It's a Boing article.
Boing article next.
There's an IO9 article after that.
Jack Williamson, a science fiction grandmaster. I don't know if you've heard of him or not. He's an older author. But there is a series being done as part of as part of the Science Fiction Grandmasters 2000 SFWA Nebula Banquet. And they are putting together videos, or they did put together videos. This one's up on YouTube, where he talks about what he thought of scientifiction.
What? See? That's not a word.
It's there.
Stop saying that
he
word.
He actually says it, and he's a grandmaster. Anyway, he talks about what sci-fi meant to him as a boy growing up in Portales, New Mexico in the 1930s. And it's fascinating. It's, you know, we don't think of science fiction pre-Arthur C. Clarke all that often. Mm-hmm. A little H.G. Wells, maybe, or Jules Verne. But here's somebody who was living it in a time where science fiction meant landing on the moon. That's reality for us. But then that was crazy. We can't put a man on the moon. That's nuts.
I can't say that word.
Scientifiction?
Scientifiction? Scientifiction?
Just said it.
Scientifiction. Okay. Fine. I guess I can say it now. But the other IO9 article that we were going to discuss is one about a Russian science fiction novel that Annalie is saying that you should definitely read. It's Roadside Picnic. It's by...
Arkady I Boris Strugatsky.
I always like to let you say the Russian words because you're very good at it. And if I just pause long enough, eventually you'll fill in the silence
and
say it. I don't know much about this book, but this sounds really fascinating. It's a brand new translation done by Olena
Bormashenko.
No, I want to try it. Bormashenko.
Da, молодец.
We need an Anne equivalent for Russian.
Yes.
And an Anne and Sean equivalent for German and Japanese.
All and more. Actually, we probably need one for English too, frankly.
One for English, yeah.
I'll tell you why I picked this story. There was a movie in the late 70s, Soviet Union movie called Stalker that launched a bunch of video games. I don't know if you're familiar with those or not.
Yes.
And it's a weird, weird movie about these folks going into the zone, which is this place where these alien artifacts landed.
The auto zone?
No.
Get in the zone.
This is like more in like the Siberia zone.
Oh.
But it's like this weird area with zombies and alien artifacts, et cetera, et cetera. I rented it from Netflix on a DVD once. And like the only print they have is half with subtitles and then a third with bad English overdub. And it's just like this weird compilation. But it's an amazingly cool story. And it's based on this book, Roadside Picnic. The concept of the book is even cooler, which is there's this zone and it's got all the weird zombie people and all these weird artifacts. But the idea is that they don't feel like the aliens actually left the artifacts on purpose, but they probably just left them as trash the way we would if we had a picnic and didn't pick up after ourselves. Hence the name Roadside Picnic.
Oh, that's awesome. That does sound very good.
Now, in the other weird thing, Ursula K. Le Guin wrote the foreword to the reissue that we're talking about, and Boris Strugatsky wrote an afterword.
Now you're just showing off.
Boris Strugatsky wrote an afterword where, yeah, I know, I'm like saying Venezuela, Paraguay. Boris wrote an afterword talking about how this is the full text, not the censored text that was put out by the Soviet Union back in the 70s. But the interesting thing is it was censored not because of political ideology. That's what we always jump to the conclusion. Oh, yeah, the Soviets wouldn't allow you to say anything that made capitalism look good. No, the Soviets were fine with the politics of Stalker because, if anything, it makes it look like, you know, Western ideals are horrible. They didn't like the dark scenes, and they thought it would be bad for children.
Mm.
So all these same sort of concerns that we have today from some areas about dark fiction and possible reasons for censorship, and you shouldn't like let kids look at this or let people read this, were existing in the 70s in the Soviet Union, except the government had the power to actually stop the publication of the book, and they made him take all this kind of stuff out.
Interesting. That does sound pretty cool. Wow, what a great history.
So check it out. Yeah, it's available now from, I think, IPG, Roadside Picnic by Arkady and Boris Strugatsky.
Very cool. Hey, so we are hoping, so the Parsec Awards are happening.
Yep, that's the Dragon Con Awards for speculative fiction.
Mm-hmm. And podcasts. For podcasts, yeah. And we presented last year, which was a lot of fun.
Did. I feel like we could do better.
I feel like we should maybe be nominated for something. I would like to hope. I mean, maybe.
It's an honor just to be presenting.
Yes, it absolutely is. But
it's
hey,
more of an honor to be nominated.
So the nominations are open.
Once, right?
We were nominated once. We did not win. So the nominations are open. We've actually already been nominated a couple of times. So thank you guys very much. And yeah, if you're going to be at Dragon Con in Atlanta, maybe we'll be up for an award and we can all hang out and have a big party.
Now, Veronica.
What?
I know it's very exciting that we're nominated or someone has nominated.
Could potentially be nominated.
And we could potentially be a finalist. But we should point out that anybody can nominate any podcast. So if you're a fan of Functional Nerds or SF Signal or We Come From the Future or any of the fine podcasts out there, you should go and nominate them.
Do we get to be nominated twice because we're a video show and an audio show?
I think it's just podcasts. I don't think the YouTube show actually counts.
Curses! Blast! That's okay. No, seriously, it's a lot of fun. It's a great community of people, and we're all very tight, and we hope to see you all there. Should we move on to the calendar?
Why not?
Okay, so on May 15th, we have Rail Sea by Chana Mieville.
That's tomorrow.
There's
or
a great,
for some of you, yesterday.
Or yes, there is a great Penny Arcade comic that I will point to later in the show about Chana Mieville.
Oh, I saw that comic, actually. That's pretty funny.
But yes, this is the one that deals with the elusive Mouldiwarp.
Oh, yes, it does.
If I have to say Mouldiwarp one more time... It's going to be very bad.
I thought
bad.
He might have gone for Mockerjack, but he goes for Mouldiwarp.
Mouldiwarp. So yeah, I do enjoy Chana Mieville. Some people can't get past the language he uses in his books. I don't mean like swears. I just mean...
Just the made up like Mouldiwarp.
Yes. Well, yeah, the kind of...
Mouldiwarp's
there's a term for it that I'm not rocking right now. It's okay. But yeah, he's a great writer. I'm excited for that one.
May 22nd, we got three big books coming out. First one I want to tell you about is Princeps, a novel in the Imgur portfolio by L.E. Modesitt. It's a follow-up to Scholar, which, after discovering a coup attempt and preventing a bloody civil war, Quirrell was appointed Princeps of Telbor. And so we get a new episode in the young Imgur's life.
Hmm. Also, we have 2312 by Kim Stanley Robinson on May 22nd. The year, of course, is 2312. Scientific and technological advances have opened gateways to an extraordinary future. Earth is no longer humanity's only home. New habitats have been created throughout the solar system on moons, planets, and in between. But in this year, 2312, a sequence of events will force humanity to confront its past, its present, and its future.
And speaking of Mira Grant, whoever she may be, Blackout comes out May 22nd. It's the conclusion to the trilogy that began in the Hugo-nominated Feed and the sequel Deadline. Now the year is 2041, and the investigation that began with the election of President Ryman is much, much bigger than anybody assumed, with too much left to do, not too much time left to do it in. The surviving staff of After the End Times must face mad scientists, rogue government agencies, and as Veronica pointed out on the last YouTube show, zombie bears.
Zombie bears. Can't go wrong with zombie bears.
Oh, you can go way wrong with zombie bears.
Yes, you can.
Not careful.
Let's take a moment, though, to thank our sponsors. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many of the New York Times bestsellers. Now, wait, are we announcing who won, what our next pick is going to be for June? No, we haven't said that yet. All right.
But you could drop a huge hint by just telling people a free audiobook that they could get.
If you want to pick a great free audiobook,
we're not saying
we
anything.
We may or may not potentially read going forward. Tigana would be one of those.
Oh, by Guy Gavriel K.
By Guy.
Yeah.
Guy Gavriel K.
It's narrated by Simon Vance.
It is narrated by Simon Vance, which
I think I'm going to add that to my cart right now.
I already bought it and downloaded it. So what do you think of that? Just wow. Because I really have been looking forward to picking
and
up
you,
this story at
my
some
friend,
point.
Could have it absolutely free. If you're not a member of Audible yet, go try it out. Audiblepodcast.com/sword is the place where you can get one free audiobook to try it out. Could be Tegan. It could be anything. There's all kinds of great books over there.
Now I'm going to try to say his name one more time properly. Okay. Guy Gavriel K. That's it. That's his name.
That's all there is to it.
I don't think he goes by Guy.
No.
It sounds French to me.
Guy
Belmont. That's a hockey player.
Ah, the
in case you didn't know that.
Guy Belmont. Actually, on Forecast this week, I corrected Andrew Main when he called you Veronica Belmont.
That what did he call me?
Veronica Belmont. I said, no, it's Belmont.
Belmont. We'll talk more about him later in the show, actually.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
But right now it is time for Barrier Sword, which is our feedback from the audience. Now, as I mentioned, there is a Penny Arcade post up today that deals with China Mieville.
Well, it's actually, was it just this morning?
I thought it was.
Oh, you're right.
I think it was just
it's
today. Yeah.
God, it seems so long ago. I'm like, oh no, I saw this days ago, but you're right. I only read it this morning.
No, actually, Eric sent this over to me over email, and he always sends me the best stuff. And
I'm a subscriber to the Penny Arcade RSS feed.
Oh, are you? Oh, I'm sorry. But basically, they're making fun of Moldy Warp. He says, I want to punch him as soon as he says Moldy Warp.
Well, yeah, because he says, I want you to read the description of China Mieville's new book and tell me how far you get before you want to punch him in the face. Okay, all right, there it is. I want to punch him as soon as he says Moldy Warp. Where did you get to? I didn't. I already wanted to punch him from a previous book.
I posted this in the forums, and people were getting a kick out of it and trying to figure out which book is more or less punchable. And I didn't find Perdido Street Station to be very punchable. I enjoyed it very much. I did not read Un Lun Dun, so I can neither confirm nor deny that that is punchable. But Embassy Town seems to be pretty dense and vaguely punchable. Nick says Embassy Town is toughest in the first 40 or 50 pages.
Vaguely punchable.
Punchable.
That's great.
Yeah, Michael says that he lemmed Embassy Town. There's a good little discussion going on about the about the language that China Mieville uses and I'm trying to find that word that I'm trying to find. Trying to find that word I'm trying
well,
to find.
You know, well what's interesting said, about Veronica, Penny Arcade, well too, Tyco posted, well, they always post a kind of a description mm-hmm. or a blog post to go along with every one of their comics. And he talks about how he's a huge fan of Neal Stephenson and some of the newer books. He loved the original Cryptonomicon, but every book past that has been torment. He says, I choked down Anathem from about the halfway point, Jaws mm-hmm. set, et cetera, et cetera. The difference between Neal Stephenson and China Mieville for me is that I never liked the latter, even though I'm supposed to, even though it is simply an accepted fact that people of any cognition whatsoever are turning each page with a shaking hand, ready to receive his next sacred revelation. I own every one of his books, each time thinking this will be the one, until his unique ocular drill begins to whir and I must hurl the book across the room or be blinded.
Oh, and he goes on to say, this may be the first time you have read on a website that China Mieville is something less than a god. I've certainly never seen it typed, which was reason enough to do it. Well, I don't think anyone's saying he's perfect.
No, but he does get a lot. He gets a lot of fanboy attention.
He does.
And he's very hip.
And a lot of critical acclaim. For
and
sure.
I think he's good, but I also understand what Tyco is saying. Absolutely.
Yes. There's another thread by Justin about how do you take your audiobooks? Go ahead.
Oh, he says, with coffee, bacon, a side of hash browns, and an A-OK, now I'm hungry. It's a point of curiosity I've been cultivating of late, having no great deal of experience listening to them. Well, I've been trying to change that recently due to said curiosity, but there are only so many hours in the day. Obviously, I'll continue to listen as much as I can, but I'd like to get a little info from experienced listeners. In the varied experience you've had, how has the reading tend to go about? Not necessarily so much the way the narrator speaks, but how fast or slow? I've heard some people saying they sometimes speed it up. Is that common? How do the narrators usually handle characters? Slight variations, no variations? How do they go about opposite sex characters? How often does it become silly? I've heard multiple narrators are somewhat rare. Is that true? I suspect that many of these questions are likely to be answered with some form of, it varies, but I'm grateful to get any extra information I can.
So personally for me, I never speed it up. I know you have tried that, but I do not yet.
I'm the opposite. I never speed it up.
No, but you did that. You did that for a recent book at the very end.
Oh,
yes, you did.
You know what? You're right. I did that on, what was that book? You're right. I'm a liar.
It was, it was Lies of Locke Lamora.
No, it wasn't Lies of Locke Lamora.
Yes, it was.
Before that. No.
No.
Yeah.
Was it Ready Player One?
No, it was not Ready Player One.
You were on an airplane. You were coming back from freaking Hawaii or something.
Hawaii. It wasn't Lies of Locke Lamora. Oh, quiet.
Are you sure?
I'm looking in my library because I have it in here. It was Rule 34.
Rule
34, I wanted to finish on the plane ride, and I calculated how much time I had, and I had half the amount of time I needed to finish, so I did it 2x. And the only reason I was able to do that was because I knew I was on a plane with nothing else to do, and it would make me concentrate. I wouldn't drift off. I wouldn't start getting bored. I would concentrate because it was talking faster, and I wouldn't really have anything else to do because I'm on a plane. I can't do that when I drive. If I put it on 2x or 3x while I drive, I miss way too much. I have to have it on 1x, and then I'm fine. Every once in a while, I may have to do a 30-second skip back, you know, because somebody cut me off or whatever, and I get road rage. But most of the time, 1x does me fine. And I even listen while I'm running. I listen while I vacuum. I listen while I, like, unpack groceries, fix food. Like,
and as for the people who narrate the books, there's a lot of variation. I mean, typically, in my experience, it's been one narrator. And that narrator will do some differing voices. Sometimes they're very different. Sometimes they're not that different. Oftentimes they do both male and female voices.
The good narrators do a female voice that doesn't sound weird. Mm-hmm. They're not talking like this because it's a lady, but it still sounds like a lady. Some they're good at it.
Yeah, you can definitely tell the difference.
It's a female narrator, the opposite is true. They'll do a male voice, but it just sounds different. It sounds like a man.
Somehow more masculine in a way. Yeah. Hey, so apparently,
hey.
tell me, hey, Hey, Tom.
Hey, Veronica. What's up?
What's up? How are you? How are you? You good?
I'm good. You good? I don't know. You want to finish a podcast with me?
Okay.
We got some TV, movies, and video games.
Yeah, tell me about that.
Actually, just movies.
Just one. Just one.
This is interesting. Fox and Ridley Scott have nabbed the rights to a self-published science fiction series. And I know this will give many in our audience hope. Of course, everybody's heard about Hollywood jumping all over the gray, whatever.
50 Shades of Grey.
50 Shades of Grey.
Whatever. Right.
But Deadline Hollywood broke the news that Ridley Scott and Tony Scott's Scott Free are partnering on a deal to snap up Wool, a 5-part science fiction series by Hugh Howey, which was self-published.
Ooh.
The Wool series is 5 short books, each priced at 99 cents. Post-apocalyptic future, humans have damaged the planet so badly that they have to live underground in a giant silo. And books have sold almost 140,000 copies.
That's awesome. If any of you guys have read it, tell us what you think if you've read that series. I'd love to know what you think about it. That's pretty cool. Man, how exciting for that guy to have his stuff nabbed up by the brothers Ridley.
Yeah, absolutely. Howie said...
I'm sorry, the brother Scott.
Brothers Ridley.
The brothers Ridley. They're both named Ridley. It's very weird. Our parents were not
Scott
very
Ridley
creative.
Tony Ridley. Howie said... He said in a video on his website, I still have to keep my expectations low because the chances of something actually being made remain slim. So he's aware of how this industry works. Mm-hmm. He says, but I munched a lot of popcorn watching Ridley Scott films. Whether or not anything gets put together, it's unbelievable.
Awesome. So let's move into our book check-in. So we are at the midway point with Hyperion by Dan Simmons.
Well, you are at the midway point. I think both of us are done.
I am at the, you guys, we are, Tom and I are both done. So we won't spoil anything, but I wanted to catch you up on some discussions that are happening, in the forums. A lot of you are lemming this book, which I was pretty surprised about because I went into this pick assuming it was a pretty safe bet. Like assuming that it's, you know, it's kind of a new classic. I've heard so many great things. It's like one of those series that people like really recommend you read. And yet people are still lemming it, including Nimrod, who says, okay, so it's official. I have yet to go back to finish The Poet's Tale and I can't bring myself to finish Hyperion. Just could not find it interesting at all. Would have rather been spending my time working on another book other than this one. And to have to continue on to Fall of Hyperion when I can't even move forward with the first book does not appeal to me.
Here's
to a better book for June.
Many people said
Anyone else on the same tree ship?
Well, obviously something sunk in. He said tree ship.
Yeah.
Gordon said that he has found it fascinating. Anne says she already finished reading it. She's crazy. But she used speed reading, which she seldom does with fiction. But I would have saved time just lemming it. I have no interest in reading another Simmons book. So even
ever.
Though she finished it, she kind of spiritually lemmed it. And then Tim says, I lemmed it. The characters weren't interesting. Certainly not interesting enough to pick up the book again. This is starting to remind me of The Magicians all over again. I feel like when we have these books that are high concept, there's a certain element of the audience that just says, whoa, too weird, too out there. Don't like the characters. Don't like where it's going. I'm out.
Yeah. This is a different Anne, by the way. This is not Anne S., the German speaking persuasion.
This is a non-German Anne, but still.
Yes, correct.
This is a different kind of book than The Magicians, but it is still a very, I used the word high concept just now. I'll use it again. It's not a very clear cut. You know where it's going. You know what the plot's going to be like. You know who the good guys are. You know who the bad guys are. It's very experimental. It's very literary. It uses a lot of allusions. It's being told, as we mentioned, in frame style so that you don't get a linear narrative. You've got to jump back and forth. That may be throwing some people off. They may say, I don't care about the characters because they're having to move back and forth so much between the main narrative and the story narratives.
Gosh, you know, I don't see that. Like, I don't really see the characters as not being interesting. I found the stories to be so unique and so interesting. I can see falling out at the poet story. I can kind of see, but man, the cruciform.
Well, in fact, Zach's, that was the very story that made him jump out. Yeah,
I know. That's what I'm saying. I'm not that surprised about that particular one. Let me
actually,
pull
Tom's
up. Hmm?
A Poet's Story seemed to be where a few people loved it.
Yeah. So that's interesting. It makes sense, I guess, for me.
I don't get the people who say that I didn't like The World. I find The World absolutely fascinating. The World Web with Farcasters and the ability to create a house where you can have rooms on 7 different planets. The idea of the ousters, the old Earth being destroyed by a singularity. I mean, this is exactly what I was talking about a few months ago when I was like, I want to read a space novel. I want spaceships. And I actually went and got it with Alistair Reynolds' Blue Remembered Earth, and I was feeling pretty good. But this is right up that same alley.
I don't want to get into it too much because I don't want to be spoilery. But Saul's story, I think, was absolutely phenomenal, very gripping. I thought the cruciform story was exceptionally gripping and scary.
There was a recent movie, though, that was based on the same concept as Saul's story. Now, Saul's story obviously predates that
movie. But they were very different.
Yeah, totally. But I think some people, if they're exposed out of order, right, they've never read Hyperion. They didn't read it when it came out in 1989 or 1990. Mm-hmm. And then they think, oh, well, this is just that movie ripped off, even though it's the opposite.
Right. Well, anyhow, not every book is going to be something that everyone loves. I mean, that would be virtually impossible. I don't think we've ever had a universally loved book.
Well, you know, maybe I think Chris is the last post on this feed as we're recording right now. Mm-hmm. And I think he has the perfect response to all of this. He says, Jorge Luis Borges wrote about lemming books, although I don't think Borges called it lemming books. he said something like, if you start a book and it doesn't speak to you, put it down. It wasn't written for you, but there are plenty of books that are.
There you go.
And I think that's perfect, where it's like, you know what? You may not like every book, and you probably shouldn't like every book, but that doesn't mean that others won't like it, and that doesn't mean that you won't like something else that others may not like as well. Not every book is written for every person.
And if you don't like this particular book, there are, and even if you said you will never read another Dan Simmons book, there are many other stories that he has written, according to Rick, who talks about Carrie and Comfort, which is a horror book about a group of people often referred to in the book as psychic vampires who can control other people's minds and use their puppets to play often sadistic games with and against each other. We have Summer of Night, which he describes as being a lot like Stephen King's It. There's the Ilium, which is the first of a 2-book series. It's basically the Iliad on Mars. And then Flashback, which Rick says is probably the most controversial book he's written. It's set about 30 years in the future, and society has crumbled due to a drug called Flashback, which is also in the Hyperion universe. Yeah. So that's kind of cool how that ties together.
The controversial part of it is that he attributes the collapse of society to current political people. Mm-hmm. So if you're one of the people who doesn't like them, you're going to love this book. If those are your current political heroes, you're going to get upset and frustrated, but you're going to have to look past it. And in fact, Rick says, look, if you can look past the politics, it's actually a really good story.
Yeah. People have some issues with some of Dan Simmons, his somewhat xenophobic points
of view. He's become increasingly strident over the years.
He's also one of those sci-fi deniers.
Sci-fi deniers?
He refuses to call science fiction science fiction.
Right.
It's speculative fiction.
Well, he plays with that, but yeah, he's very much against the term sci-fi. But
sci-fi
then he also
denier.
Uses it, so I don't
well,
know.
Well, no, he doesn't use it. It was put on his book, but the publisher could have done that.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway, also, if you love Hyperion, you may be very excited about the potential 2013 Hyperion movie.
I unabashedly liked Hyperion a lot. I don't know if I loved it, but I liked it a lot. I got no criticisms, and I would love to see it turned into a movie. I like that universe.
Yes, Catfish is posting a link to an IMDb page, and he says, at the moment, it looks like a project which might never get made. The last update I can find is from 2010, but still might be a fun discussion. And we have gone over some of the actors or you know, potential people
and
that would play these roles.
The author who's working on the idea would be to collapse Hyperion and Fall of Hyperion into one movie.
Right. Which,
that's kind of a huge undertaking, but
it would make a lot more sense.
Probably the right way to go if you didn't turn it into a series a la Game of Thrones.
You'd have lots of very angry people if you just did the first book alone.
I think that this should be an HBO type series.
That'd be great.
Because then you can do Endymion as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that makes more sense. I think trying to take both these books and squeeze them into one movie is a tall, tall order.
Indeed. Well, you guys still have half a month left to finish the book. This show will come out on the 15th, and the wrap-up will be towards the end of the month. So you've got some time if you're not lemming it, if you're going forward. I suggest keep trying. If you're stuck on the Poet's Tale, get a little bit further, see how it feels. I think the stories towards the end of the book are
a very hard life.
Huh?
Just 3x through that.
Yeah, 3x through
that. Whether you are doing audiobook or
through that.
We're just flipping pages really fast.
We have an email. This one comes from Aaron. He writes, "Hey, Tom and Veronica, I just found out about you guys and Geek and Sundry in general. I'm super stoked. This is about the video show. To hear Gaiman and Dick being thrown out there brings warm fuzzies to my book, Love and Heart. Yay. I enjoy what, be it your personality and literary smarts, and who, the authors, you're bringing to the table. Can't wait for the next installment. As for a dragon name, how about Gelf? A Gelf can be an elven creature, sword, a genetically enhanced life form, laser, or it can be anything you want it to be. In our line of business, imagination is everything. See Urban Dictionary for more details. And for bonus points, it was a Gelfling that merged the Skeksis and Uru into one awesome whole." I don't know if I'm saying that right. I haven't seen that movie in a really long time.
I can't or remember, Uru. But it sounded right to me.
Okay, I know how to say Skeksis. This is from the Dark Crystal. Just like you guys would have brought the sword and laser communities together, and the yet-to-be-named dragon seems to be traditional, half-traditional dragon and half-Mechagodzilla.
That's an interesting guess at the dragon's name, Aaron. You might want to submit it in our Name That Dragon or Guess the Dragon's Name,
yes.
Contest. If you can properly guess the dragon's name, go to swordandlaser.com, enter the name you think is right, and tell us a little bit about it, plus your name and other information, and we will announce the winner on our YouTube show on June 8th.
Yay! Finally, she will have a name.
She has a name. Finally, she has a name. Know what that name is.
We will know what to call she it.
Well, you know, the way we'll find out is we will ask the dragon. And if he responds with smoke, then we know we got it right.
Also, another side news. We mentioned Andrew Main earlier today. I did a little project with him. He's doing a podcast called Andrew Main Stories.
I know.
What?
He mentioned this on Forecast. This is why I was calling you Veronica Beaumont. And it's awesome, but I was so jealous because you've also recorded for my audiobook and I still haven't got it out.
Get it done.
I know.
I worked really hard on that.
I know, and I'm working on it. Okay. I'm actually got it in Notational Velocity and I'm at chapter 20.
Great. So I recorded a story for Andrew Main called Secret Identity that he wrote. And it's super, it was very touching in a lot of ways for me. And I really connected with the character and I really enjoyed it. And I hope you guys do too. So, we'll put a link in the show notes and you can take a listen. It's about, I'm not sure how long it is.
I've got it up here. Maybe it'll come up if I press play. 10 minutes and 54 seconds.
Oh, pretty long. Yeah. I did it all in one take. I didn't actually go back and redo any of it. I just wanted it to feel as natural as possible.
You know what? She also did this show all in one take.
I did.
She's a pro.
Take 10. But I really enjoyed it. So I hope you guys will take a listen and maybe subscribe if you want to hear more of his stories. I think he's a great writer. It was a lot of
fun. Andrew's underrated.
Not to us. I mean, we've had him on the show.
No, not to us, obviously. But I think a lot of people, I think this is one of the problems with the self-publishing empire, right? Mm-hmm. You can get your name out there easier, but then you have to compete with thousands and everyone sort of says, okay, doing a podcast, doing some publishing. And Andrew's a pro.
Yes.
He's worth checking out.
All right. Well, if you want to get in touch with us, I think we have come to the end of Sword and Laser episode number 100. Our email address is feedback@swordandlaser.com. The website with all our good stuff is swordandlaser.com. You can watch the video show over at swordandlaser.geekandsundry.com or on youtube.com/geekandsundry. All of our discussions happen over on Goodreads. And if you want to call and leave us a voicemail, the phone number is 415-779-6736 or 415-7-SWORD-6. We will see you guys next time.
Bye, Brady.